I'd like to introduce, we have this amazing speaker coming today. His name is Michael. He rode his motorcycle all the way out here from Minnesota, and here he is.
Yeah!
I'm introducing myself. Hey, is this absolutely beautiful out here or what? It's like one of my favorite places to come every year for a couple reasons. I love just nature and beauty, and I don't know why God lets some people pastor in Colorado and others in Duluth, Minnesota, but he does, and they're like two of the most beautiful spots on the planet. And so if you want to see the spot that's almost, well, maybe just even a little bit more beautiful than this, it's Duluth, Minnesota, but you have to come in the only month we've never had snow, August. So if you come in August, you're pretty much historically guaranteed there won't be snow, pretty much. Any other month, you're going to get snowflakes. So I'm just wasting time waiting for people to come out of the hallway there. In case you wondered, is it going to get better than this? No, but I'm spending a little bit of time. What's that? Yeah, let's not. Let's not and say we did. I haven't even been following. Like, my life has been so hectic the past 2 weeks, I haven't been following my favorite Viking football team. But I heard that they won this past weekend. And who did they beat? Nobody knows. One of those teams. Well, the other reason that I love coming, besides the beauty of nature, the other reason that I really love coming here is getting to hang out with you guys for an entire week. This is an incredible, I mean, every once in a while, don't you find yourself in one of those rooms where you kind of wonder, maybe this is only me and my, you know, great old American male insecurity, but do you ever find yourself in one of those rooms that you're just kind of wondering, like, how did I get in that room? Like, why am I in that room with those people? And it's because, like, I love the way that you guys and gals are taking the gospel of the kingdom, taking the presence and the power of the resurrected Christ all over our country and all over the world. Like, I just am so enthralled with doing that. That's kind of like the heartbeat of my life, is seeing that happen and being able to participate in that. And I love being in this meeting every single year with you guys that are actually, you know, they're doing that. We're not just talking about it. We're not just theorizing about it. But when we leave here, we're all over the world. We're doing this, and I just have to tell you, it's I'm not exaggerating by any stretch of the imagination. It's like an incredible honor to get to hang out and to pick your brains and to kind of learn how it is that we can do this better in so many different ways and so many different kinds of places. I just think it's an incredibly powerful, incredibly fun. Hey, I want to just highlight a couple special guests that have come with me this year. One of the guys is right back here at the camera. His name is Jack Lind and his incredible wife, Patty. And you can give him a hand, yeah. They drove out here, and that's worth a hand. And Jack has been a part of the Vineyard Church in Duluth, Minnesota, since actually before I was there. Jack and Patty have, and been involved the whole time. He ran for years and years and years. He ran his own video company, kind of a filmmaking company in Duluth, and has won all sorts of awards. He's been, over the past year or so, working with the Multiply Vineyard team and doing some filming for us. And one of the things that we're doing is, over in the Pink House, we've set up a little film studio. And we are recording, and I would like to get every single one of you on for like 3 to 5 minutes talking about some of the distinctives of the Vineyard. You can actually, if you go to our Vimeo page, you'll see there's about 15 or 20 little video clips there from young, old, every age group, every generation, every ethnicity, people talking about kind of the distinctives of the Vineyard. And we're slowly, over the, you know, past couple years and then over the next few years, we're just going to continue to collect little video clips of people talking about things like the now and the not yet. I mean, we've got lists of distinctives that I think are really distinctive to us as a family, as a tribe, as a movement. And so we're just in the process of recording those, and I would love everybody to get like at least a few minutes. We've got a list of about 10 or 12, you know, so everybody gets to play. plant churches that will plant churches. One of the ones that I absolutely love is the way that Christ accepts us just as we are, but he doesn't leave us the way he found us. It's kind of a distinctive of the vineyard that he accepts us just like we are, but we're not stuck there. Like, he's going to change us and grow us. And so we're just recording everybody's little take on that, and we'll edit it down to make you look at your 3 to 5 minute best. If you talk for 20, it'll be really hard. If you talk for 30 seconds, it'll be even harder. But if you talk like for 3 to 5 minutes, it'll be perfect. And Jack is a master at making you look really good. And so over in the pink house, I mean, if you're just out wandering around, or if you have a little bit of time before or after a meal or before and after a workshop, just stop by there. We'll be there, and we'll help get that set up. And we'll just continue to collect those. And then several of you, we're just going to grab, and we're just going to wrestle you over there. Because, like, you don't think you have anything to say, but just you talking about your family, the Vineyard family, is incredibly powerful. And we use this for two ways. We use this, people come to us all the time wanting to be Vineyard church planters or Vineyard pastors because they've read about us, that they've, you know, listened to music, that they've seen some of the stuff that we're doing, they've been to conferences, but they've never been in a Vineyard church. And so this is a way to begin to introduce them to who we are. And then secondly, they're great sermon resources. These little three-minute clips work great when you're preaching about the already and the not yet of the kingdom, and there happens to be five Vineyard pastors on there talking for, you know, a couple minutes each, that you can just grab one of those and begin to use those. And so we're just putting those together as part of the Multiply Vineyard team just to make that resource really available. So Jack is right there. Bob Logan is around here. Here's Bob right over here. And Bob's actually one of our speakers, and he's been working with the Multiply Vineyard and the Vineyard Missions teams, helping to develop coaching over the past 2 to 3 years. He's been my personal coach. He's been coaching me, which is the only reason I'm probably still alive and sane, other than the 28 years I've been married to my incredible wife, Brenda. And so he's helped me a ton. And so I would take this opportunity with him around here all week long to grab him for a meal or to grab him for some interaction. He's been around ministry and around the Vineyard since really early days, and he's a great guy to learn from. And then also Corey Garris. Is Corey in the room right yet? There he is, Corey, right back here. Corey is part of the Multiply Vineyard team, and you might not meet him. So that's why I wanted to highlight him. He and a fellow named Jim Plank are really helping our Vineyard churches that want to try multi-site, that want to try, like, same church, multiple locations. He helped to oversee all the sites for the Columbus Vineyard for a number of years. He was a site pastor there, and now he's moved to the incredibly beautiful state of Colorado, and he's working in the Denver area with Jay Pathick doing the same kinds of things. And they've got some really creative ideas, some really fun stuff that they're doing. And so if the church that you're currently leading here in the U.S., if you're thinking about that at all, that guy right there is your resource, and so I would grab a little bit of time with him. And there's probably more people I could introduce, but I'm going to move on. How you guys doing? I so appreciated Fran, the way that she walked us through some of that. What do you call that when you do that kind of thing, Fran?
Guided meditation.
Guided meditation. Yeah, I so appreciated the way that she walked us through that, and the way that over the years that I've learned to do that kind of in my life. It started way back in the early 80s with Richard Foster's book, The Celebration of Discipline. I was going to a pretty conservative Bible college, and he had a little paragraph, I think it was just a short paragraph, about imaginative prayer in there and about entering into the story. And I remember our professors catching a hold of that paragraph and wanting to edit it out of the book because it was, you know, it was back in the early 80s, it was New Age. But I remember reading that paragraph and being somebody who most of my life had been an artist. And like, I love imagination. I love living in that place of creativity and imagination. And there's been so many times where I've been, I don't know if you guys have experienced that, but I've been reading the Gospels and pressing in and then finding myself in the story and experiencing Jesus turn to me, look right at me. Like, it was just recently, a couple weeks ago, I was in John chapter 21 about the whole reinstatement of Peter. And I was like one of the people in the story as I was praying through that. And I showed up on the beach where he's making breakfast. And I was exhausted and I was tired. And I felt like he walked up and he put his arm around me and he said, "Hey, let me make you some breakfast. And then let me tell you where all this stuff is headed." And it was this incredibly cool time of just interacting with him and doing that. And I don't know if that's something that you generally press into, but like I wholeheartedly recommend that. And just in your prayer, allowing Jesus to personally speak with you about the things that he's calling us into. As I was doing that about this meeting for the last several weeks and doing that about this time speaking together, I felt like that God kind of highlighted a couple things that I really want to just kind of unpack for you. And then my wife, Brenda, is going to come up and she's going to really help direct us in some ministry time. Because I think that they're just getting the week started. I think there's some really cool stuff that God wants to do. And so here's where I'm going to start. There's a slide that should pop up there at some point. I pushed the button. He said sometimes it takes a while. I'm going to push the button again. Hey, look at that. It went. We organized, as we were planning for this meeting, we organized these talks in kind of a way using a little diagram that I had found through a couple websites that where Bob Logan does a lot of writing and another guy's name's Dave, is it DeVry? Dave DeVry. And talking about kind of how missional movements reproduce. And so what we organized this, and I kind of wanted just to give you a picture of some of the teaching that's going to go on this week. I kind of wanted to show it to you in a graphic form. And so kind of here it is. The talk that I'm going to be doing here is about kind of embracing the mission of Jesus or seizing the mission of Jesus and kind of what is that mission. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story, and I'm going to use that to kind of unpack some what I would call kind of timeless truths of discipleship and leadership development that we've done, I think, in the Vineyard really incredibly well. And then one of the other things that we're going to hit, that we're going to highlight, is the next one there. Ba-da-ba-ba-bish. Let me just read it off my notes since it's not coming up on there. Is really about how to live in mission. Did it go backwards? It went backwards. I'm only pushing one button, and it's the forward button, and is there anybody up there that can push buttons for me? I'll just go beep, and that's when you push a button. I'm really good at beeping. Okay, now we're going way back. We're back to the beginning. Does this ever happen to you guys at your local setting? Yeah. Don't you love technology? I love technology. It's so incredibly wonderful, as long as it's challenging. And it partially works from time to time. Yeah.
As soon as you work on this. So the forward button is that one right?
That's the one I'm pushing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
Now, where did it go?
I went back one.
Oh.
Forward again.
Bink. Could you, Andrew? Andrew, would you mind grabbing a chair and just sitting here and pushing that button for you? That's the button I'm pushing.
Push it again.
Watch. Now, with you here, watch this. That's the button right there.
Yeah.
Push it again. No, it worked. Dude, you're a genius.
I can push it for you if you want me to up there as well.
Why don't you just do that? Yeah. So I apparently have trouble with technology. Okay, so I'm talking about seizing the mission of Jesus, kind of grabbing a hold of that, and then once you begin to like be captivated by the mission of Jesus, which pretty much you're in this room because you are, then the next stage is you begin to live on mission. That it begins to inform the way that you do it. You begin to adopt like missional thinking, missional behaviors. If you want to take it much further, then you have to really understand the culture that you're going to. And I'm excited for a talk that's coming up. Jay Pathick is going to talk about like doing that, and I've had him actually teach some of our pastoral pastoral training folks that we working with at Duluth Vineyard, and I love the way that he just unpacks that for them about how do you actually exegete a culture in a way that's not just reading books and not just looking at demographics, but really what's the culture really all about and how does that work? And so he's going to press into that. And then we're going to talk about kind of incarnating the gospel. Like, okay, so now once you understand the culture, how do you actually bring the gospel the way that Jesus brought it to us, incarnation? How do you actually bring it into a specific setting, into a specific group of people? And then the kind of the scale, this little circle thing goes on and on and on in terms of multiplying disciple makers and forming churches and then mobilizing teams and leaders. And what these guys have done kind of in this little graphic is to show that you, as you keep doing that and doing that, what you end up is you end up multiplying churches really all over the country, all over the world. Now, I've seen lots of different diagrams that map this out. I thought this was a helpful way to kind of think about what we're doing over the course of this week, the way that we've decided, like, the kind of topics that we're addressing in our main sessions. And so I just wanted to give you a picture of that, kind of where that came from. Does that make sense? Okay, now that the graphic all works, it makes sense. So I'm talking about kind of seizing the mission of Jesus, and I want to do that really from a point of view of looking at my own story as a way to do that again. Click. There it is. Maybe I'm not pushing the button hard enough. Maybe I have to push it. I'm so used to the iPhone now where you just tap it, right? And, all right, I'm going to move on. So when I was introduced, I was a senior in high school. It was the fall of 1976. When I began to first hear the story of Jesus, the thing that captivated me, I was captivated by two things that just totally and completely grabbed my heart and have never let go. And the first one was I had never felt so deeply loved in my life. I mean, that was the first thing. And I love that that's where we started the week at with Fran's stuff. I had never felt so deeply loved in my life. Somebody actually had me read John 3:16. For God so loved, and then they said, put your name right there. For God so loved Michael. His name was Pastor Ted. He'd been a missionary in Africa for years, came back to the States to raise his children, was pastoring in a little Mennonite church. And I'm sitting at his kitchen table arguing with him about, you know, like, why is there suffering in the world? You know, all the questions that you think are unanswerable at that point. And he goes, well, let's just, here, read this one verse out loud to me, Michael, and put your name in there. And then not long after that, I think it was maybe the next time I met with him, he took me to Psalm 23. I love the way that we sang that this morning about how the Lord is my shepherd and he loves me like a shepherd loves his sheep. I had never felt so deeply loved. I was captivated by being loved. And the thing that captivated me just a couple weeks ago as I was looking at that John 21 passage and I was in the story was Jesus looking at me with these incredible eyes of love and saying, let me make you some breakfast. And then let's look at where this whole thing's headed. It's like to be loved like that is like grabbed my heart. Because I was looking for love, like everybody who doesn't know Jesus is, right? I was looking for love in experiences. I was looking for love in relationships. I was looking for love, you know, through trying to get good grades but never being able to do that, so just getting bad grades and skipping school. I was looking for love like, well, as the song goes, in all the wrong places, but somebody singing that for me? Was that Annabeth? Annabeth, I love you. That's awesome. I was absolutely and completely captivated by Christ's love. But the other thing, as an artist, that captivated me by his stunning beauty. Like the way that he lived his life, as I read through the Gospel of John the first time, the way that he lived his life was stunningly beautiful. I mean, drop dead gorgeous. Beautiful. It was the most beautiful thing that I'd ever read or seen in my entire life. The logic of his arguments was beautiful. It's like the way that he presented himself as the answer to everything Israel had done for several thousand years was beautiful. The way that God orchestrated this rescue. I mean, I don't think we often think about it that way, do we? It was absolutely beautiful. It was it made the most beautiful rose you've ever seen pale in comparison. It made the most stunning piece of music you've ever heard just seem like shallow in comparison to the beauty of Christ. I love the way in the book, The Divine Conspiracy, Dallas Willard talks about that if we really want to disciple people well, the thing that we have to do is allow them to be captivated by the beauty, by the glory of who God really is. That we just keep putting this image in front of them over and over and over of how beautiful he is, and eventually that wears through so many of our arguments and our defenses that we have up. I experienced that because I had all these arguments. And so as I think about how I ended up in this place today, it started right there, being absolutely captivated by his love and beauty. I forgot to put a picture of myself up there. We'll move on from that right now. That was me in Chicago in art school. Sweet. And then immediately they began to disciple me. And, you know, again, in The Divine Conspiracy, Dallas Willard talks about how discipleship in the New Testament doesn't really get explained that well. It gets shown, but Jesus never says, so this is how you disciple. This is how you do it. He just did it, and they just followed his example. And the two things that stood out to me in the midst of discipleship as I was, you know, the thing that has kept me kind of in this place doing what I do is the intimacy, because I was so deeply loved, it was the intimacy that was developed with Jesus. I love that when I met you guys, when I met Vineyard. It's like when I met Vineyard, I was like, you know, and I heard about intimacy and the place of intimacy and worship, and it wasn't just singing Kumbaya anymore, you know, and God bless you if that's like still your coolest song, but it wasn't just singing it. Now all of a sudden, Kumbaya had this power, this punch to it, and these simple little songs of intimacy. And so the discipleship piece for me is as I began to like be welcomed into this family, into this community, because that's how it always happens, right? Discipleship happens in family, in community. It's meant to be this thing that we are doing with one another. It was the intimacy that like was so powerful there, and then obedience. Pastor Ted expected my life to change on day one because the power and the presence of the resurrected Christ was in my life. He expected me to not use women anymore. He expected me to quit skipping school and racing cars. He expected me to not steal. Like, he expected these things to change in my life. And all of a sudden I realized, oh, like, there's something to this. That this is going to affect my money and the way I found it. This was going to affect my sexuality, right? This was going to affect the way I treated people. This was going to affect absolutely everything. This discipleship was like to the core of who I am. I was attaching myself to Jesus, my master. I was attaching myself to the Christ, the resurrected one. And this was going to kind of reformulate my life, my plan for living. It's that whole Mark 1, right? Repent. The kingdom of God is at hand. It's right here. It's available. You can experience this, but it's repent. Turn 180 degrees, Greek word, metanoia, to change your way of living. And I love the way that he expected that of me and invited me into that, called me into that. And what I found is that it wasn't me changing on my own strength, right? It was me changing as I was in this place of intimacy, being loved by Father God, that the Holy Spirit began to work that change in me, right? Am I making sense? It feels like we're back in kindergarten. This is like, if we want to multiply churches, as I've sat and prayed and dreamed and thought the past several years about, like, how is it that we multiply churches? It starts by people being captivated by the love and by the beauty of Father God, by the presence and power of this resurrected Christ. It starts with the discipleship that's rooted in intimacy, and then it grows to dependency on God for our real needs, and then obedience is a natural result of that. Have you guys ever heard of this thing that Danny Myers wrote? Danny, are you in the room over here? Danny Myers, and working with my wife, Brenda, wrote this thing called Gospel of Wholeness. Have you guys ever heard that? It's probably one of the single most helpful pastoral tools I've ever found. And I mean, seriously, reproducible throughout the whole church. I had no idea. First time I went to listen to these guys teach about, listen to Danny teach about it, I had no idea really what it was. It was just something that was going to help with discipleship. I loaded up a van of like 15 people and drove to the Columbus Vineyard, sat down in this workshop, and these guys start unpacking, you know, that oftentimes we put obedience first. And then hopefully people become dependent, and along the way, maybe they'll become intimate with Jesus. And he said, you know, what Danny did was he began to unpack this way to really disciple people that was based on intimacy, that grew into dependency, and finally, you know, had the fruit of obedience in there. And as I was listening to it, I go, this is great, this is great. And then he starts pressing into, like, how this is going to affect each one of us. And he asks us to list out all these things that we go to other than Jesus to get our needs met, and I couldn't think of a thing. Like, I sat there with my whole table. I know exactly, right? I sat there with my whole table full of people, and they're writing all this stuff down, and they're getting all this. And I can't think of one thing. And then my sweetheart wife looks at me, and she goes, you can't think of anything? And I go, I'm really struggling. And she goes, give me that paper. And then she's such a good pastor, she didn't write anything down on it. She just helped coach me through, like, what my things were and all that stuff. And I just kept going, well, Brenda, I think you're the only thing I ever go to other than Jesus. You know, I think you're like that. Anyway, it's like, it's such a, that tool transformed the way that we train small group leaders and the way that we disciple people in our church, because it does this. It includes intimacy, and it includes obedience in the way that we're training and raising people up. See, I'm not sure, just be really honest for a minute, I'm not sure that Jesus ever calls us to plant churches. What he told us to do was go make disciples. And disciples, once you get a few of them in a room together, you have a church. Right? I mean, it's just the natural thing there, that we're discipled into community. Jesus didn't invite Peter to follow him by himself. He invited, like, a whole bunch of people. And they all began it. And it kind of forms that first real community, that first real church. We are, at our core, as leaders, as pastors, we are disciple makers. That's what we're about. And I think if we ever step too far away from that into, like, all this really cool thinking about how to multiply and plant churches, if we lose this piece, the disciple-making piece that's right at the center, then we're multiplying Sunday services rather than multiplying churches. And I regularly, with young church planters, I have this conversation. I am not talking about planting a Sunday service. The Vineyard's not in the business of just planting more Sunday services. We want to plant churches, and that's discipleship. And so having this intimacy, dependency, obedience, those are the two things that just nailed me, the intimacy and the obedience, at the core of how we're making disciples is so key. And we just can't get away from that. That's, if we're going to actually do this thing, that's where it really begins and presses into. And then the very next thing that happened to me, like week one following Jesus, I was recruited to lead. Who does that? I found out that Vineyard does that all the time, right? This was in a great little Mennonite church, and the guy asked me, he goes, hey, next week, would you lead devotions? And I said, sure. What's a devotion? And he goes, oh, you just read something out of the Bible and do a little teaching. And so I did that, right? I did that very first week. I got done that first week. He goes, that was excellent. He goes, would you like to do that again next week? And I'd never had so much fun in my life. It was really fun. I sweated bullets like all week long to get to that point. And then I read the story of Jehoshaphat, and I basically just, you know, re-quote without the melody. What was the guy that, never mind. You guys would know, but I can't think of him right now. Sang the song about Jehoshaphat. And Jehoshaphat was king of Jerusalem long, long time ago. Don Francisco. Right? He was my Bible study tool. As I read that story, and I just kind of unpacked that, and I just basically said, what are we putting our confidence in? What are we putting our trust in? And that was devotions. And the guy said, that was excellent. And he said, you want to lead it next week? And I thought, I wondered to myself, does Don Francisco have another song? How am I going to do this? Anybody been there? It's like I was recruited into leadership, like on the very first day, just invited into this thing. And over time, I figured out, I really like doing this. This, like, fits who I am. Within the first year or so, I began to have conversations with folks who were pastors, and they were telling me, Michael, you should really consider being a pastor. Like, you were naturally gifted at this. You're good at this thing. And I thought, well, I don't know. I don't know if I want to be. So I think this leadership development, getting people engaged right away. One of the first things that I heard in Vineyard circles when I began to hang out was this. I remember, I think it was John Wimber saying it, never do anything alone. Like when you're doing ministry, never do it alone, right? You always bring somebody with you. Always be discipling somebody. Always be training somebody. And remember, over the years, you know, we developed a little acronym, IRTDMN, which is just about identifying, recruiting, training, deploying, monitoring, and nurturing. We never give ministry away. Just, I want to tear my hair out. In fact, I think I did. When I hear people say, we're just going to give ministry away. No, there's monitoring and nurturing that goes on with those new leaders for their whole lives. And so just to recap some of what we've been taught over the years, you know, last year, Phil asked me to put together, or 2 years ago, this little booklet on, called Launching Leaders, which just is, it's a primer. It's not like a, it's not anything more than just the basic primer of what IRTDMN looks like. But it's kind of like who we are, you know, the Launching Leaders. Did I say that? Anyway, so then along the way, here's what happened to me. I decided I was not a good Baptist. Well, several people helped me decide that I was not a good Baptist. In fact, I was a way better artist than I was a Baptist. I loved Jesus with my whole heart, but to save my life, no matter how much I wanted, I couldn't be a good Baptist. I didn't fit the mold. And I said things I shouldn't have said when there was a microphone in front of me and all sorts of different things along the way. And I knew that I loved Jesus. I knew that God deeply loved me. And so I began for almost 20 years pursuing a career as an artist. And I have to tell you that for me, somebody who's an introvert, sitting alone for 8 to 12 hours a day painting all day long and praying was the best 20 years of spiritual formation I could have possibly had. It was absolutely amazing. Just sitting with God and painting his creation, whether it was people or still lifes or landscapes or whatever the thing happened to be, I absolutely loved it. I learned to run my own business. I mean, he discipled me in so many things, but it was like this spiritual formation piece as I was going through what I will call a process of discernment. Am I really called to be a pastor? Over that 20 years, I made, you know, my living doing art. I got married to Brenda. We started having, you know, 3 amazing children who are all getting married in the next 9 months. Like, if I look stressed, I am. And like, it's just absolutely just, you know, it was an amazing 20 years of getting to spend time with Christ every single day, all day long. Along the way, I got opportunity after opportunity to help plant churches. And I was never the lead pastor. I was always a guy kind of brought in to help, to like to be a right-hand person. And I watched so many really good leadership things. I watched so many horrible leadership things along the way. At one point, I tried really hard to join a Franciscan monastery before I had met Brenda. And I went and spent 3 days with them, and I thought, this would be great. I could be an artist. I can love Jesus, and there'll be no relational difficulties along the way. And after the 3rd day, the guy who was in charge pulled me aside and said, I think you're supposed to be married. And I said, God bless you. And I jumped on my motorcycle and I took off. And so, like, I mean, this, I can't explain what that does to you when you have that much time, especially as an introvert, alone with Jesus every day for all those years. And over the course of that time, like, let me see what the next slide is here. Oh, I went backwards. I hit the wrong button. This, I know, I'm getting there. Hold on. I'm not as clumsy as it seems. So for me, this was a completely kind of what I'm calling a relational discernment process. We've set something up like this for our church planters in the United States. We tried to create something, a series of conversations. I'm going to explain it here, but you can go through on our website and you can take a look at it, or you can grab one of us and ask more questions about it. But for me, that discernment process and then the spiritual formation that came from that was really all centered around making art. And so I just threw a couple things on the screen just so you could see some of what I was doing. A couple self-portraits. you know, that I ended up using like for logos or for different kinds of stuff. And then, you know, some drawings, some paintings of things. There's a couple from northern Minnesota. And then along the way, I actually, when you use a paintbrush every day, like maybe it's this way for your computer or your pencil or your fountain pen, whatever like utensil you like to use to kind of think creatively. Along the way, I kind of built a relationship with one of my paintbrushes. Well, probably all of them, but and not when I say relationship, I don't mean like, you know, the movie where the guy's getting married to his computer. I don't mean that kind of relationship, right? But I mean it like it becomes this personal extension of you. And I'll never forget one day as I was painting, I felt like what Jesus spoke to me personally, this was like probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 years before I became a pastor. He spoke to me personally, was, Michael, what I want to do is I want to paint a portrait of Jesus in your life. And as I'm painting that day, I'm looking at the brush thinking, gosh, you know what? God's using a brush like this in my life. And he's using everything that comes my way, and he's painting a picture of Jesus in my life. Like he's doing that in me. And that theme comes up when I become a pastor. So there's something about kind of a spiritual formation process. There's something about a discernment process that happens in community where God affirms our call, that he calls us into ministry, and then he affirms that in relationship with other people. There's something about that where he is like constantly working on this painting. And I've used this thought like over the years many, many times when I'm working with groups of people or when I'm working with a group and helping to develop them to be the kinds of leaders that God's called them to do. I'm thinking, you know, a painting isn't an instant deal. It's a slow deal. And it's got lots of starts and stops. And it's got lots of, you know, setbacks along the way. And especially with watercolor. Watercolor, like you can't hardly guess what it's going to do next, depending on the humidity and the altitude and the atmosphere. And there's so many things that, and the condition of the water that you happen to be using and what the way that, I mean, there's so many variables to the whole thing, you can't figure it all out, just like you can't figure it all out when you're discipling somebody or when God was working in my life. And so this became like this really meaningful thing to me. And actually, I brought a whole bunch of copies of it with me. I'm going to channel my inner Oprah. And on the table as you leave, there's a copy for you of this print. Because this is one of those things, I don't know, if you're not an art person, if you're just going to go take it and line your birdcage with it, then God bless you, go do that. But this is like a really high quality art print. And the other morning as I was praying about you and praying about this time together, I felt like God said, you know, just, Michael, you've got like a pile of those upstairs. Why don't you give them away? Like this is the group to give them away to. And so, well, no, don't do that. But here's the deal, like God's doing that in your lives still today, right? He's still painting. Like he's still creating a portrait. But then he invites you into the whole artistic process as well. And so it wasn't very long from that point that when I felt like God said, now, Michael, I want to flip your career. So think about it. I was 38 years old, and God says, now I want to flip your career. And now I want you to go paint a portrait of Jesus. You're going to be the pastor. Like, you used to pastor for fun and paint for money, and now you're going to flip that. You're going to pastor for money, and maybe you'll paint again someday. It's like 15 years into it, I started painting again. But that for that 15 year, I didn't miss painting for 15 years living in Duluth. Because what God was doing was he's saying, okay, now, Michael, it's like I want you to paint a portrait of Jesus throughout the Twin Ports, throughout that Duluth community. So that when people look at you, when they look at the church, when they look at the vineyard, what they see isn't the vineyard. What they see is Christ. What they see is the power and the presence of the resurrected Christ living through that community. That will captivate them. They'll feel loved. They'll see the beauty. They'll see what happens when people of every political persuasion actually lay that down and begin to love one another and then to begin to love those people outside that. And so, like, That's been the story. That's been this thing that I lived. And those little bullet points on there, for me, kind of sum it up with some really key things that we're invited into as Vineyard leaders. And if we want to see our churches multiply in the U.S. or around the world, for me, these are some key things that at the very beginning, this evangelism thing, this Greek word, euangelion, which is just simply translated good news, right? That this really is good news. that there's more beauty than you ever imagined. And you can experience a love that you've only dreamed about, that you've only searched in empty, dry, broken wells for. There's a love that goes well beyond like anything you've experienced, but that you always hoped existed. Like that they get captivated by that, seeing our community. And then immediately, as people are discipled, it's intimacy. It's dependency on Jesus. It's deep, deep obedience from day one that we begin to welcome them into that kind of life. And then, again, from day one, we begin to train leaders. We begin to help develop the leadership gifts that God's placed in them. And we don't decide whether they're 10-talent or 5-talent or, you know, or 2-talent leaders. We don't get to decide that piece. But we're just called to invest in them and help develop them and train them, right? And then there's this whole piece of it baking, like a really long time in the oven. Like, I think that's so important. I know it was for my life. I remember at one point, I was walking around northern Minneapolis, and the folks that sent me from Minneapolis up to Duluth are right here, is John and Sue Marsden. And I remember at one point, I'm sure John has heard this story, I was walking around northeast Minneapolis, and I was whining to God. I was really frustrated, angry at God, because I felt like God had put a lot of stuff in me and the world needed it. Do you know what I mean? You ever met young leaders like that? Like, you know, the world's going to hell in a handbasket, and if you would just, John, let me do what I know God's telling me to do, the world would be a better place, right? And I'm walking along, and I'll never forget, it was like, it was dusk, it was darker, there was a house over on this side, and their big picture window, you know, was on, the lights were inside the house, you could see inside the house. I'm walking along, and I remember a crack in the sidewalk, and I was looking down, and I put my foot, like, right in front of it, because I didn't want to break my mom's back or anything like that, and so I put my foot right in front of it, and I had just got done saying to God, God, why is John holding me back? I just got done saying that to God, and I felt like God just interrupted my walk that day, and he said, and I felt like what he said really simply is, it's not John who's holding you back. And man, that grabbed my attention, right? It's like all of a sudden I'm whining and whining for the last hour out on this walk, and I feel like God all of a sudden answers me. And he corrects me. It's not John. John's not the one holding you back. And so I just paused. I stopped. And I remember looking at the house, and they were all kind of looking at me. And I'm like, I'm really embarrassed. I don't want to move from this spot until I figure out the next good question to ask God, because I feel like I got his attention, and I want to make this a good one. And so I asked the question, why? Like, why, God? Why are you holding me back right now? And this is what he said, because I love people. Father God said, I love people. And the implication was that, Michael, if I let you go now, the people I love are going to get beat up. And so the spiritual formation time is so important. Helping young leaders develop into the men and women that God has called them to be so that they can actually bring the power and the presence of the resurrected Christ. I don't think they all need 20 years like I did, but they need time to develop in that. And I think sometimes we do such a disservice to our younger leaders when we just say, wow, you got leadership gifts. We want to plant churches. We got this number we're trying to meet. Let's go. It's like, no. It's like, let's develop them. Let's train them. Let's do that. One of the things that this afternoon among the Multiply Vineyard group that we're going to roll out, I'm just going to tell you all about it because then the rest of you can wish you were there, is we've been doing a partnership. We've been building a partnership for the past couple years with Vineyard Institute, and we've developed a church planter residency program, or I'm using it this year as a pastoral residency program in our church, where I take 12 months and I develop some young leaders into pastors and church planters. Every year we've done it, I've seen people not make it, and every year we've done it, we've released some really good church planters. You know, you get the whole gamut, and so now we're developing it so that any Vineyard pastor can like get a VI login and get access to all the materials for free. Okay, that's the deal. I said I'm willing to do it through you guys, but it's got to be free for every Vineyard pastor. And they're like, how do we make money? I go, I don't know. That's your deal, right? And then the students can log in, and then the students pay for it if they want to be part of the residency program that you're running in your church. Does that make sense? And so you can contact myself or Caitlin. And if you're not in the meeting this afternoon, and because you shouldn't skip your meetings that you have, but I just wanted to let the rest of you know that that's available. And I think it could work. We're developing it with the churches in the UK as well. So I think it can work in lots of different places. So it's kind of cool. So the training, spiritual formation piece there, and then painting a portrait of Jesus. Just painting a portrait of Jesus. So here's the thing I think. Brenda, why don't you come on up? Here's the thing I think. I always think about this in two kind of venues, two avenues at the same time. The first one is this, that God really is in the process of doing a painting in your life, in my life. And so one of my favorite prayers to ask him is, God, what are you working on right now? Like, what in my life doesn't quite line up, you know? I teach our folks, if you have trouble hearing God's voice, here's a prayer. Hear God's voice right away, almost every time. God, is there anything in my life you want to tweak? Is there anything in my life that you want to fix, you know? And so it's like, so he's working in each one of our lives that way. And then the second thing is this, he's also given us a paintbrush to go paint a portrait of him. And like Bob Harper was talking about earlier, like in Eastern Europe, and the portrait of Jesus that's being painted in those different countries through those Vineyard folks. For some of you guys, like, it's a paintbrush like that. For some of you, it's in your city. For some of you, it's like in county after county after county. We have a vision at Duluth Vineyard to tackle all 240 counties in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and the UP of Michigan. We want to plant Vineyard churches in every county. It's like, that's cool. And everybody else can help, right? But like, we want to paint that portrait of Jesus across our entire region. And so what's the paintbrush that he's offering you? And what's the part that he's working on in you? Does that make sense?